Accession number 29953, Reel 5.
Mr. Edie, Reel 5. Yes, can you tell me how you...
Actually, I'd been moved up from Melbourne to Moratai. Nobody wanted to know me at all. I had put in a tent by myself, a tent that could hold at least four, if not more. And all I could do was to go and try and check up on all the wireless operators that were there waiting to go into their own particular area, which I did and everything else. Then I was told to go on this flight to somewhere and all the rest of it. And when I finally got back, it was in the evening, and I didn't see any point in following it up from there. I wanted to see the wireless operator in Moratai to get his views and things, so I went to see him the next morning, and he was not at all happy. He was not at all communicative. He was just looking utterly miserable. So I got enough information from him and said what I thought would be the best thing to do. And after that, I said, what's wrong with you? Can I help in any way? What's involved? Oh, and he said, nobody can help. Nobody can help at all. I said, oh, come on. Surely something can be done about something. Oh, he said, it isn't really, because we dropped this party in to Borneo, and everything was all right. They landed safely. They made arrangements where the next party, CIMET 1 going in, the next party would be dropped and all that, and the party were dropped. It was a third attempt, I think. They got a clear passage to drop them, and they were dropped, and that was the last that was heard of them. And then there was reported that they thought they had seen some of the Australian or soldiers in the place where they were supposed to be going to in the end, sort of thing, at that situation. So this wireless operator said, there's nothing we can do. We've just got to wait and hope they'll get in touch, because the invasion is due. I can't tell you when it's due, because I'm the only one here that knows it, but it's going to happen in the near future. And he said, we can't get in touch. And he's the top man in four parties, this Toby Carter. I didn't know, he didn't give a name. And there's nothing we can do about it. I said, well, I'll drop somebody else in. He just laughed and said, there is nobody else to send. They're all booked, everything's organized. There's no other person can be sent in. So I said, oh, I'll go in. He wouldn't believe to start with. I said, I don't mind. I said, I've never dropped by a parachute before. I've no parachute training or anything. But if somebody can push me off the plane with a parachute, I don't see why it should go wrong. And I said, I'll see. And he went away. Maybe about an hour afterwards, I was getting on for lunch, and I went to go to lunch. And he came back and said, it's on. You leave tomorrow morning, 4 o'clock, breakfast. And that was it. Of course, this had got round everybody there, and the Australians never batted an eyelid. They were murmuring amongst themselves. The New Zealanders each came across and said, we heard the news, great for you. But the Australians never mentioned it. But I don't know whether they're taking bets on it, I wouldn't go or not. But that would be about midday, and I had to get kitted out for operational stuff, checking my own stuff there. We were supposed to check the torpedoes with the stores, the wireless sets, and so on, food, money, the lot. However, later that morning, at least early afternoon, this sergeant turned up. He had been on operations elsewhere and had just suddenly arrived. So he said he would go in with me, which was very nice of him. So we went the next morning, went for the plane, got on board, two of us. Pilot came, the crew, started up the engine, cut the engine. Pilot said one of the engines are not working too well, postponed for 24 hours, which is not a very nice thing to do. They had normally three planes, and two of them were either apparently out of action or not available. This was the only plane there was. So we went back to the headquarters, and I got some more stuff written up about the arrangements for contacting PT boats from otherwise, Went out again the next morning, and the plane was there, and we took off, and we went over. And we flew for hours and hours. I had no idea where we were going or anything else. I didn't know where we were being dropped even. They'd given me a map eventually, just before we were leaving, off the area. The SEMA 2 map that's out in the hall there. But outside that, I knew one word of Malay, and that was susu, which means milk. Because at the mess outside Melbourne, there was a person, a civilian, instructing in Malay, and he had been in Malaya and that sort of thing, and he was always invited in the officer mess for lunch. But he's one of those very proper gentlemen. He would wait until somebody asked him, he would come and sit down here and that sort of thing, and he'd sit there and he'd get coffee or whatever it was, and he'd say nothing for a while, and then once or twice it happened, he said, "Would you please pass me the susu?" And somebody passed him the milk, so I knew one word of Malay when I went to susu. But the whole thing was in a way ridiculous, but there's nothing else that could be done. There was no way. So I went, we flew, we dropped some stuff off somewhere. I had no really idea how long it would take for the flight or anything like that. And we finally came over the place and they told, "This is where he is." So they helped me on with a parachute. A plane, the slowest speed at which you could fly was 130 miles an hour. So you couldn't step out the side. You open the trap door, put a kiddie slide up there, you lay in that with your foot in the side, and when the light changed, you took your foot off and you slid out. I'd been told what you had to do when you get to the bottom and all the rest of it, which you're trying to think about and all this sort of stuff. Some of the ropes of my parachute must have got caught, because I was a fraction of a second late in going out. I knew that, but it wasn't any length of time. And of course, nobody had even thought of mentioning it because it was so obvious, but I didn't think about it. When the plane's travelling at 130 miles an hour and you come out of it, you're travelling at 130 miles an hour into plain still air. So you just get this real, just like a gust of 130 miles an hour coming at you, hitting you in the face without expecting it. So I didn't know what happened for the first few seconds. Then I looked up and the parachute was open, and I saw my pal's parachute well away from me. It was open too, and we just drifted down. It was a wonderful flight, a wonderful drop. I couldn't imagine anything more wonderful. It wasn't exactly in the mood, but you had ranges of these hills all covered in forest, you know, tropical forest stuff. Absolutely gorgeous, the whole view all the way down. I had been so busy watching that that I didn't realise I was almost down. I happened to glance down, and I knew I was pretty near there, and I'd been told when you get near the ground, you pull on your main risers to shoulder level, and then just before you hit the ground, you let go, and that checks you a bit, which I tried to do. But I must have grabbed the wrong ropes. I must have grabbed the ropes that were behind, not the main one. Because I was heading for the edge of the river, and suddenly I swung right back. I landed in the branches of a tree that was right at the very edge of the river. And of course, the parachute got caught up top, and the main discomfort was I got covered in ants, because there must have been millions of ants in that tree. And it was just a case of went through the branches a bit, and I was about 7 or 8 feet from the ground. Just knock your bump, get out your parachute harness, and you land on the ground perfectly. No fuss at all, no rolling backwards or forwards or anything. It was a wonderful land. But when I landed there, of course, I had no idea where I was compared with anything else, and I wasn't sure what would happen. And I suddenly heard people not far away cutting their way through the undergrowth. And when I really got my helmet off and things and turned and looked, there were four of the locals in loincloth, each with the parang, the sword, looking at me, yapping away. I had no idea what they were saying, just yapping away, and this went on for a bit. And then I didn't know whether they were really serious with it, but they'd just been using it for cutting their way through the undergrowth. I didn't know that at the time, but it wasn't very comfortable. And that two of them came forward then, and each took very gently one of my arms, and they led me away. And they had two canoes there, and they got me into one, and the others got in the other, and we paddled across the river to a landing stage. I still hadn't seen anybody that I knew or what was all happening. Got out of there to climb up a bit, and when I got to the top, there was this party, a Cement 2 party, Toby Carter and the rest. I mean, at any other party, I wouldn't have known who they were, but it was fact, it was them. It was absolutely wonderful getting them then. My companion landed in the river and he had to be fished out and he was soaking wet. But it was just one of those meetings, having met them and having had a good discussion with them and everything else. The wireless operators were very fed up and really annoyed because the set wouldn't work. And so, I mean, we just had a chat at the first, and then after a wee bit, I went with the wireless operators to see what was happening with the set. And they had built this wonderful hut just inside the forest edge, so it would be not seen from the air. It had this aerial, it was the highest trees you could get and everything else. The set was all there. I said, what's wrong? They said, well, we think the hand generator needs adjusting, because when we turn it round, smoke comes out of the power pack. So I said, well, I've never seen a hand generator. I was never allowed to see one back there, so we'll have a look at it. And they said, I don't know, the voltage should be this what's been set and that sort of thing. However, I found there was a knob, two screws, and you got into a knob, and that was the adjustment of the voltage. And sure enough, the voltage was far too high, but I didn't think that was the cause of it all. But they were sure it was. Oh, that's right, if its voltage is right, we're all right, and connected it all up. Still smoke coming out of the power pack. I said, well, just to take it to bits, because they didn't know anything about what was inside. But I mean, I'd dismantled them myself for my own use back in England and that sort of thing. And this was there, and I thought, this is what had happened, was that they were using these sets, which we had always used on batteries or main. They were using them from a hand generator, and that caused an awful lot of background noise. And they quite rightly said, oh, it needs another arrangement for smoothing the actual current. Instead of having one condenser and one resistance, they would need double that. And that had been put in down in Melbourne by supposed technicians. They connected two wires wrongly. I mean, I knew it. If it had been anybody else, probably, apart from a few of us, you would never have known what was happening. But I spotted it right away that this was it. So got a soldering iron, swapped two wires round, and tried it out. The receiver worked perfectly. Tried it on the transmitter. It wouldn't work properly. I couldn't get it to tune properly. So I said, what's the length of the aerial? I said, it's the aerial that we're given. I said, we'll see. So I measured underneath it just roughly by feet and that sort of thing to get it, because it was a dipole which should be either a half wavelength, three half wavelengths, or five half wavelengths. They had no idea about this, of course. And I measured it, and as far as I could make out, it was a full wavelength was the aerial. It should be the half wavelength cut in the middle, you see. So I said, it's the aerial, it's the problem, nothing else. So we just connected one half of it to it, and it worked perfectly. But there was no chance. It would never radiate being in amongst all the trees and everything. So I said, well, that's it for tonight. The first sketch tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock. We'll take all the equipment up there. Of course, the wireless operators were kind of very disappointed, very annoyed, because they'd got all this lovely place all set out for themselves and everything. And I saw the CEO and said, what I want is a table or a box or anything to put the sets on. Throw a bit of wire over that tree and I'll work with a wee bit off this one for a bit and that sort of thing. And nobody was in favour of me. Everybody was against me. You could see that. This will never work, the wireless operators were going around. It'll never be any good. You've got to have this and you've got to have the next thing. Oh, it was a real laugh. At the same time, I had asked the CEO if I'd explained to them when they were under training that there was this small receiver called an MCR, that they should ask for it. I was sure that they had it in stores, but we're not telling anybody, we're not issuing it. I said, you demand it. But the best thing to do is to ask for one for each of the officers, which was one for Toby Carter, one for the doctor, and one for an out party that was there. And they had got that. So just to make sure I could maybe work it more quickly, I asked Toby Carter for his MCR, because I was sure he would have got it. Oh, he said, you can have it if you like, but the batteries are practically flat, because I've been listening to this stuff all the time. But he said, the doctor's got one. I don't think he's used his at all. So I got the doctor. He was a doer type. He wasn't all that friendly type of person. But he eventually gave me up. I said, if you don't give me that MCR, I'm doing nothing. You can suit yourself. He was a major. So he gave me it. And so I connected it up on a short bit of wire, and we waited to the time, near almost on time. I was listening around about the frequency we would use, and I could hear some set being tuned up. So I waited a second, and then I tuned up our set again. And then dead on sked time, I heard them calling me. So I immediately broke in, because I knew the work break-in system. And called them, and within a minute we were in contact, and I passed our messages to them as far as to me. We were working at it, but they were good operators, whoever at the other end, at 20 words a minute, and went right through all my urgent ones, and then asked them to send theirs, and they could work break in as well, and they did, and then I told them to wait, and we had a number of non-urgent messages to send. And I handed over to the two wireless operators. Of course, they were full of everything. It was wonderful then, because they were getting on to it. And they wouldn't work as I had done with the MCR and the B2 transmitter. They just wanted to work with, they called it the Boston. It was an American set, because it had been adapted in America. So they just worked from that. So I'd sent to the base station no break-in, and just let them know that somebody else was taking on. So I waited for them a second until they got going, and they were going all right, so I walked well away. So I mean, I don't like being watched doing things myself, so that would save them any embarrassment. So it worked perfectly, and it worked perfectly ever after that. If I was doing it myself, I would work break-in with the MCR. They wouldn't, I wouldn't touch the MCR. But we'd never had any trouble again. Not in that sense. There was one trouble after that, because there was a sub-party which was situated, I suppose, about 20 miles away, which was 2 days' travel by foot. And they had a set, we had a set for them. But the distance is such that in the jungle and hills, you couldn't get any direct signal going. It had to go up and come down, and it was too close for this. There's this skip distance from probably about 5 miles there to about 40, 50 miles. So eventually I got arrangements made that we would send one of the wireless operators to the party next to us, which was a good bit away, with a set and receiver, and then I could work to them, and they could pass the message on to the other one, who was 20 miles away from me, and we worked that way perfectly. It was an easy thing. It also meant that when we started moving, we could keep in touch with the sub-party all the time. Everything was doing fine. I let them work all the skeds if they would. I wouldn't allow them to try and set up the stuff in the jungle, because it was a waste of time. As far out in the open air, there was no danger of the Japs. If the Japs came across, you would just disappear. But there was no fuss from that side, and everything was doing quite well. And the CEO was quite nice, and we got on quite well. And one day, must have been there for a good week, I had been given a fortnight to go in, and then I'd be picked up to be brought out. So after a week, he said, come on, let's have a chat together. So we went away from the others. He said, I don't know how you feel about this, and it's up to you, it's your choice. I would like you to stay with us as a full member of the party. but it's up to you. I said, well, I'm very pleased to stay with you as a full member of the party, on condition that if you don't want me at any time, I'm quite happy to go away, but I don't want to go back to Morata anyway, sort of thing. So he said, that's fine. So he said, we've got this out party, which we haven't heard from, of course, all this time. It's about 50 miles away. We're wondering if you would go and see what's happening there. I said, that'd be fine. I'd easily go there. But there's no spare set, so I had to go on my own. It was arranged. The CEO came back after a bit and said, this isn't funny to you, but the Japs are encamped in force down the river a bit, which is why you would normally go to get to this place. But some of the locals know there is a way to get other than going down the river. You go down so far, you come up a smaller river to a certain point, and then you walk over the hill, and then you get on the river at the other side and go down to where you wanted to go to, which is all very nice in theory, and it worked out very well in practice. But I had one night in the first village we stopped at going down, and actually a group of our people must have been somewhere, and they had great pleasure in showing everybody the Jap head that they'd taken, which was quite amusing. But we went down the river, went up the other part. This was all in one of the native canoes. There were four of them by this time. There were three coming with me, plus another one who was the son of the headman at the place we were going to. And that headman was supposed to be more or less dying, as it were, so he wanted to get back home. And it was a case of going up this other river, which got rapids and all this sort of thing. We could paddle up it to start with, then they had to haul the boat up, and they finally you had to get out of the boat to get the thing up. But the only way of going up against the current by paddle was to keep going across the river to get the small part. So it took quite a long time, and we'd been more or less all day when there was suddenly a shout from somebody up in front and pointing, and the canoe sped away at the side, and they'd seen a wild pig that was lying dead in the river. So they went up to it, and they stuck the blowpipe, the spear part at the end of it, into this, and got hold of that and towed it back to a landing place. It was just a lot of stones at the opposite side, and they got that out, and they got stuck into cutting up this pig that had been stinking in the river, which was quite ridiculous. But they got the fire going and that sort of thing, and spearing it, they had actually speared a fish as well, so I said I'd have the fish, you can have the rest. And they made that fire, and they cooked up all they could get of the pig, and had to sleep that night, and we set off the next day again. And we got up to a point, must have been fairly near where we had to get to, and it was an actual waterfall. You couldn't get up except by lifting everything around about it, which we did. Then we finally got up to this spot. They recognised it from the description they'd been told, and there was a hut for people passing. They could spend the night in the hut. There was somebody there already, and he had his fire going, and he had two frogs on a bit of stick cooking. That was going to be his supper for the night. And that was just fine. We spent the night there, and we set off the next morning. But it must have been about 70 degree angle going up. They just walk up like anything, because I was puffing and panting and holding on to things. They'd cut me a stick to help. We got about halfway up or three quarters way up, and they said, oh, this is no good at all, we'll better go down and give you a rest, and we'll start again tomorrow morning. I said, no way are we going down again. So we kept going up, and we finally got up to the top, and it was a dead smooth back walk along a path, a clear path and everything. The only trouble was that after 200 or 300 yards, the path came to the edge of a ravine, and the bridge across it was a round log, about 9-10 inches in diameter, no handrail, nothing. they'd just gone and walked across. I mean, I had boots on, and I said, no, this is no good. So they all stood at the other end laughing their heads off, you know. This is going to be good, because they would get to go home. But I just got to stride it and ease myself across that way. They helped me up at the other end, I must say that. And we set off again, and it's a case of, you know, one minute you were going down a bit of a hill, that it would be as slimy as anything. I'd be down my bottom and all the rest of it. They had bare feet and they could kind of control themselves. Walked away along this track, came to a not very big stream, but big enough, and there's no track at the other side, so you just go into the water and waded up for a while. Then there's a track going off further up, and you went from there and kept following these tracks for the rest of the day, more or less. And about an hour before sunset, we stopped, and they, beside a small stream, it was quite nice, an open bit, they cut down bamboos and stuff, and they made a hut of a sort, and we spent the night there. Just fine, no fuss. We got up the next morning and set off again, the same business of keeping walking. No idea, I had no idea where we were. You couldn't follow them. I knew rough, I had the map with me, but you know, it was impossible. And we kept going for, seemed to be ages, and then we were quite high up and looking down on a river down below, and then one of them gave a quick happy yell and started running forward, and somebody else went running after them. And this is the place. And we stopped there and went down, and they went down to the river. There was, you know, branches and stuff. Lifted some of the branches off, and there was a canoe. It had been placed there so that people doing what we were doing could use it to go down the river. And we spent the night there because it was too late to set off. But I had been given this grand form of sleeping out there. It was an arrangement of a sling with mosquito netting down the side, a waterproof top and everything, all very nice and dandy. You got this between two trees and you got the zip fastener open, got into it, and you're lying there in comfort. It was great. After being in it for about 5 minutes, there was a ping and one of the ropes went. Then another ping, another rope went. They're all rotten. We've been in the jungle for a bit and the thing had just rotted. I finished up like this and finally got out. But it was the ants. They were everywhere. They crawled up. Even if you sat down, they were on you. If you stood up, you were fed up and you sat down. But the next morning, just as early as we could, we set off in the canoe down river and went down past one longhouse, then came to this bigger river and we turned in it. We went along it a bit, and that was where we were going, Long Berwan. Just got there, great rejoicing, great pleasure. I was darn glad to. And we asked where the others, our other party was, and they were. I eventually managed to, between signs and everything, they had been there, but a big party of Japs had come up, having heard they were there. So they had taken a move double quick. Instead of coming the way we were going, they went in the opposite direction. So there was nobody there for me, no set, no nothing at all. So we spent a couple of nights there. They threw a party for me, which was very interesting, very nice. And